Welcome to the Wild Animals Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roland Hayes, a professor at North Carolina State University, a scientist at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Now, I'm an animal tracker, and I know how amazing it is to get to know a wild animal personally. To be out there in the woods, following them around, learning their routines, get to meet their friends, their enemies, and get a taste of the real-world drama happening in animal societies every day. In this podcast, I share this drama with you by interviewing other scientists to meet the characters they've discovered while studying wild animals. Everyone, welcome to the show. Today, we're going to hear about Cheetah 784, the orphan who overcame. All right, welcome to the show, everybody. Today, I'm excited to have Anna Kusler here to tell the story of Cheetah 784. Anna is the site manager for the Zambian Carnivore Program at Kafue National Park in Zambia. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me, Roland. I'm so excited that we're here together in Kafue National Park.
We're actually recording this at Kafue National Park, excited to have the African sunset in the background and talking about cheetahs, which I know are near and dear to your heart. And probably everyone in the world knows what a cheetah is, but let's just tell them anyway. What's a cheetah?
A cheetah is the world's fastest land animal. They are a large cat, for those of you that don't know, but they're spotted, but not like leopards or jaguars. They've got little tiny black dots. And so they're a large carnivore. They live in Africa. They also used to live in parts of Asia, but they were exterminated from those areas many years ago. So they're endangered or vulnerable throughout most of the places that they still live in Eastern and Southern Africa. There's less than 7,000 of them left.
Wow.
Yeah, but they're an extremely special and an extremely incredible animal, and they are by far my favorite animal.
Right. I know that you are crazy for cats, and of all the cats, I think cheetah are your favorite. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
And they have been for a while, right?
Definitely.
So what is it about cheetahs that captured your heart so long ago?
That's a great question. So I like to call myself a professional crazy cat lady, at least a scientific one. There's something unique and special about cheetahs, and people often ask me this. They have this they have an elegance about them that I think everyone sees them. They're so fast and long-limbed. They almost move like a ballerina. But they also have these many quirks. People think of lions and tigers as being these large, majestic creatures. And then you have cheetahs that are small, and they can't roar, and they're afraid of their own farts, and
what?
they're so skittish and sort of like mild mannered that they just have this interesting dichotomy to them, being both fierce predators that can take down large antelopes, but yeah, quite literally, like if they're sleeping by themselves and they toot loud enough, they will jump up and run away. I have. I've seen them quietly sleeping by themselves on an anthill and what we call kind of like a big termite mound here in the bush. And they're just quiet and they're always on the watch because larger predators like lions and leopards or hyenas will actually sometimes try to kill them or hurt them. So they're always vigilant. And yeah, I've actually seen them. They're sitting there waiting, scanning, kind of resting, and they have farted loud enough to scare themselves and run 100 yards.
That's hilarious. So yeah. They're like a big cat predator, but also kind of a little bit of a pussycat wimp.
Absolutely. And they're the only big cat that can purr. They actually purr just like your house cat back home. So when they're happy.
Have you heard that?
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever they're grooming each other or a mother's nursing her babies, they literally purr just like a big house cat. It's honestly, it's one of the most endearing things. Here's this giant creature. You know, it's bigger than a golden retriever, and yet they purr like a little house cat in your home.
Cool. So tell us about your research project in particular. What were you trying to learn about the cheetahs?
So I work for the Zambian Carnivore Program, which is a conservation and research organization here in Zambia. And we work to conserve and protect the large carnivores and the ecosystems in which they live. And there's two study sites that we have within Zambia. There's two national parks and the surrounding ecosystems. One is Liwa Plains, which is in western Zambia near the border with Angola. And then there's one in Kafue National Park, which is right in the middle. And that's one of the largest national parks in the world. It's twice the size of Yellowstone National Park for a rough sort of give you a sense of how big it is. Massive. And so a lot of what we do is we're trying to figure out some basic questions. There's not a lot known about the carnivores here. So, you know, even simple things like, how many are there? What are the threats to their survival? How do they interact with the other predators? And then we try to identify the threats. You know, how are people impacting them? What are the biggest threats to the survival? How can we best conserve them? And so we provide this sorts of information and the and their animal movements and where they go. And we provide that to the Department of National Parks and Wildlife. And then they can go out and send in anti-poaching patrols to keep the areas that are most important to the cheetahs and other carnivores safe. So it's both a combination of research to figure out what's going on and also active conservation in the moment where we're every day going out there and helping these animals and making sure they're safe.
Wow. And so this involves a lot of animal tracking.
Oh my gosh, so much so. We're extremely reliant on the satellite GPS collars that we have. Cheetahs are one of the largest ranging land mammals in the world. They require some of the most space. And so, you know, some cheetahs have over 1,000 square kilometer home range. It's just massive.
For one animal.
For one animal. Jeez. And so you can imagine that it's not easy to just bump into them by luck. So in order to keep track of them and know where they go, we have to have these satellite tracking collars that send us the locations of where they've been. And they've been a huge help. They also help us identify den sites, so where they're having their babies, important hunting areas. And again, that allows us to then support the department in sending anti-poaching patrols into the areas where those animals are.
And so these tags are GPS, so they're a collar on the animal, they record the location of the animal, and then they send it back to you via the satellite download. So they're bouncing the data up to a satellite and then down to you in the bush. And you guys are what, just waiting there for it to show up to find out what you're going to do that day?
Basically, it's amazing. So every morning we can open up our computers and see where their locations are. And so we don't just study cheetahs. We also do wild dogs and lions. And so, yeah, it's basically, I'm almost like a menu. Every morning you open it up and you see who's available and who's around and who's easily accessible and who needs to be seen to be checked for snares for their safety. And just so for those that don't know, snares are little pieces of wire that poachers set in the bush. And that's what can trap an animal. It's like a piece of metal that goes around their wrist or their neck. And so that's what we go out there and we try to help prevent. If they have a snare, we can help remove it.
And so you can tell from the GPS if an animal might be snared?
Very often, yes. Because typically an animal will be moving. And then maybe they stop just for a couple of hours if they've killed an impala or, you know, something to eat. For lions, when they kill bigger things like roan or sable or buffalo, they might be there for a day or two. But generally speaking, if an animal has become stuck, like the snare, the wire is attached to a tree.
Right.
And so if they're really, really stuck, they're not going to be moving around much, right? Yeah. They're going to be stuck to the tree. Or if they're injured, usually after 2 or 3 days, if the animal hasn't left the area, chances are that they might be hurt. So that's when you rush out to go check on them and see how they're doing.
Right. So every morning you guys are waking up and sort of see, you waiting to see what adventure the GPS data is going to send you on that day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every day is unexpected and unpredictable. So we're kind of like these watchful guardians from afar. I always laugh. The animals have no idea that there's these like random humans out there that are like, oh, I wonder where she's been today. Oh, she moved 500 yards. You know, it's really cool. It's every day is a mystery.
Cool. So let's talk about Cheetah 784, the star of our show today. When was the first time you met her?
I met 784 on Christmas Eve in 2018. The best Christmas present I was ever given. She was a Christmas present a day early. I had just begun working in Zambia. I'd only been with the project, I think, 2 months, and I had just begun working in our project on Liwa Plains. And sure enough, the location came in that day, and they were very close to a village. And so in order to just check on her and make sure that she was doing okay, and that the family was doing okay, we went to go check on them. And sure enough, 784 at that time was bigger than a house cat, maybe corgi sized at that point.
Oh, so she was a baby. She was a kitten.
She was a cub, and she was as cute as can be. She had two siblings at the time, a sister and a brother. And so that was my Christmas Eve in 2018, was watching the big storm clouds gather on the horizon across the African plains with three little cheetah cubs jumping on their mom's head. It was pretty magical.
And what was her mom's name?
Her mom's name was 439.
Okay. Put you on the spot there. Sorry.
Yeah, it's
you guys are pretty boring with your name. Your names.
I do apologize. Yeah, they're research numbers, and they're it's not the most exciting.
Yeah,
that's its own.
So cheetahs don't have cooperative breeding like lions. They're more like all the other cats in the world, right?
Where, definitely.
Like, basically, mom has to raise the litter, and dad's just gone, right?
Or dad's what, just gone.
You don't even know.
He makes them, and that's about it. That's the extent of his involvement. Mom is the solely in charge of raising them and is responsible for their well-being. And they stay with her typically till they're almost 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes,
that's a long
time. It's quite a long. Sometimes they'll disperse. Yeah, a little year and a half sometimes, but typically 2 years, because she has to teach them how to hunt, how to navigate the landscape. And then once they're two, then that's like kind of in human years, the equivalent of about like a 20-year-old. And that's when they go off.
Right. But so that this time, like in the beginning, she's nursing, and then she must be like bringing them food, bringing them meat. And then eventually she's teaching them how to actually do this high speed chase thing.
So she can nurse them for several months, but by around 6 weeks old, that's when they start kind of moving around. Before 6 weeks, she stashes them in the grass, and they live in this like little den, they call it. And she goes off and hunts and then comes back and nurses them. And then at around 6 weeks old, they start following her around, and she'll kind of stash them in a good place, go and hunt. And then she actually kind of collects them and brings them to the kill. Oh, cool. And they'll start feeding on meat as early as 6 weeks old, but they're still heavily supplemented by milk. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, then it shifts over time, less and less milk, more and more meat. And then, once they're, a little over a year old, she actually starts involving them in the hunt. They start learning how to stalk. And that she'll actually like bring small, it's a little brutal, but it's also beautiful. She actually like brings young animals back for her cubs to practice on learn how to hunt from.
Okay. So they're still alive.
They're still alive.
Yeah.
It's, that's what I'm saying. It's often the young animals that don't even know any better. They're just kind of like being brought alive and kind of a bit injured, but like wondering what's going on.
You gotta practice before you,
learn
on the full adult, I guess.
Absolutely.
Right? Part of the life of a carnivore.
That is right. Yeah.
And so what was 784's, life like as a young cheetah?
So 784 had a really happy childhood. Her, brother did die from we don't really know. He just kept getting weaker and weaker. It could have been parasites or some just thing that he was born with. He'd always been the runt of the litter, but she and her sister, 785, were extremely strong and vibrant. And their mother was quite the huntress. She was incredible. And so they were growing up strong and healthy. And, Liwa National Park is very interesting because there's a lot of communities that are still within the park itself. Mm. And that's because there used to be people always living there. And then when the land was given to the government as a national park, one of the understandings was that the local people would still be continued and allowed to live there. And so it makes for a really interesting situation because all the animals then have to learn to live beside people. So that's something that 784 had to learn and navigate. There's something like 25,000 people that either live in or directly utilize the park in which 784 was raised. So she moved around the park with her mother, moving, near and through villages and learning how to hunt and where to find orbies and dikers, which are these small antelopes that are roughly the size of like a small dog. Mm-hmm. And that's what they love to eat there in particular. And so she grew up and she made it. She's about 14 months old. And that is the earliest known age that cheetahs disperse from their mothers.
Okay.
So typically they usually stay with mom till about 18 to 24 months. So that means just shy of 2 years old.
Yeah.
But again, in some areas they can leave as early as 14 months. That would be roughly kind of the equivalent of like a 14-year-old striking out on their own.
Okay. So like a young teenager.
It's, I suppose, doable, but not exactly ideal. You don't know, how to drive a car. You don't know how to go to the grocery store. You don't know how to pay bills. And very tragically, 784 was with her family and they were passing very close to a village. And then her mother's tracking collar went dead. Nothing. No locations, no information, nothing. And very luckily, 3 weeks before that happened, we had actually deployed a tracking collar on 784 because we knew that at any time she could then leave.
Yeah.
And she might go out and strike out on her own. And so we went out and we searched the area. Nothing. Couldn't find 784. Sorry, we couldn't find her mother, 439. And because of her proximity to the village and the fact that snaring is one of the greatest killers of adult cheetahs in that system, it seems very, very likely that her mother was poached and killed in a snare. Mm. And what the poachers do is when they die, they see the tracking collar. They know that the department knows about it. And so they destroy it. They smash it with rocks and they burn it in a fire because they know that. Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to track it right to their house and know what they've done.
Exactly. So it was very tragic. So 784 though, 784 and her sister, 785, got away. And they survived. And so a couple days later, we found them a couple kilometers away, very confused. Mm. Again, we're talking about like 13, 14-year-old, like in people years. Right. Like
on their own. And now all of a sudden, they've got to hunt everything for themselves. No help from mom.
They have no idea what they're doing. They don't know how to pay the bills. They don't know how to go to the grocery store. They're extremely confused. And we were so worried about them because we had no idea if they were going to survive. They didn't know how to hunt. Like they were right at that age when mom typically starts teaching them how to hunt. They had no idea what they were doing. And
did you see them like try to hunt?
Yeah. They had no idea what they were doing. They would, you know, they didn't really know how to stalk. They would see something and then kind of just like run after it, or like they would just kind of bumble around. Like they had no idea what they were doing. And they did lose body weight initially. And we were really worried about them, but after a couple of visits, they weren't losing any weight anymore, but they weren't gaining any weight. They were kind of like staying, but we weren't seeing them, you know, and we only follow them and see them during the daytime. And finally, we realized after a while that they had figured out how to hunt scrub hares.
Okay.
So they're basically jackrabbits. They're like bigger than your household bunny, but they're, you know, not much food for a full grown cheetah, but for a teenager,
right. It
was cutting it. And so at nighttime, they were moving quite a lot and they were actually flushing out of the grass these rabbits. And that's what they were eating.
Did you ever see him catch a scrub hare?
I did not. Okay. Actually, no, I did when she was a bit older. But during that initial period, I didn't. A couple of other people on the team early
in the
morning.
They must be shorter chases than you see on the TV.
Talking like, like as far as you throw a football at most.
Okay.
You know, it's like scrub hares are not very fast. And even a young cheetah is a heck of a lot faster than just about any other animal. So yeah, it would be a flush. The rabbit would run 1 meter from her foot and she'd usually catch it within like 30 feet.
Usually. Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. So we were a little bit heartened knowing that she had figured something out, you know, obviously scrub hares aren't going to, she's not going to survive on scrub hares forever. But she had something to hold her over until she kind of figured out that whole, like, how do I hunt an antelope kind of thing. And thankfully she had her sister, you know, they had each other. And even though that cheetahs eventually, once they eat, they reach sexual maturity and they're ready to have babies of their own. The females do split up to raise cubs on their own. But when you're learning how to hunt, it definitely helps to have a friend. Right. But she, unfortunately, then about 6 months after her mother died, her sister died.
No.
And so now you have this little orphan all alone, still trying to figure out how to hunt. And we were just beside ourselves because, you know, like, what can you do?
Her sister didn't have a collar. So
her sister didn't have a collar.
You don't know exactly what happened.
We don't. Yeah, exactly.
Do you know she died? Did she didn't just take off and go off on her own?
That's a great question. And actually, we think that the reason that she died is because the sister kept going around in the same place and chirping and calling for her and searching. And we never found the body, which, you know, if the hyenas had found it and could have eaten her, a lion could have eaten her. But typically when they disperse, they don't like run around in circles for a couple of days looking for her. So that's why we think that she died, even though the body was never found.
Right.
I suppose she could have. And then her sister could have been like, why did you leave me? But it's unfortunately.
Yeah. No.
And okay. So
now she's by herself.
Now she's by herself. And again, we were so worried, how's she going to do it? But she just, bit by bit, she gained this strength and ability to hunt, but it definitely wasn't without its difficulties, because here she was all by herself now. She didn't have somebody else to help look out for her back. She right. never had mom teach her where to go and what to do, what to avoid, what not to avoid. She had it for a bit, but not the way that a mom really wants to. You know, yeah. once you mature, you kind of get to that point where they start kind of teaching you things. And the project did a lot to basically watch her back the way that her sister and her mother had before. Really? So because we had the tracking collar, anytime she got too close to a village with people, because she didn't really know any better that people could potentially be dangerous, we would send one of our biologists out on a motorbike to essentially like keep an eye on her uh-huh. so that she didn't get too close. She was chased by village dogs. She went one point had a pack of like five village what? Dogs. Yeah, chase her down. Thankfully, she realized after a few minutes that she was a cheetah and bigger than them. And she actually, even though she was young, she actually like turned around. She was like, wait, I'm bigger than you. And then she started chasing them.
Oh, really?
And then suddenly they were like, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. And then they ran back
wow.
home. But
wow.
she was very lucky that, you know, if it hadn't been more dogs, she could have been mobbed and killed.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, there are people, a cheetah skin can be sold on the black market for a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Their bones can be sold for like traditional medicine. It's awful. And so by having a presence around her anytime that she was near a village, people kind of knew that she had a guardian angel looking out
right.
for her. That's a representative of the department and works with the Department of National Parks and Wildlife. And so they knew. And so she kind of learned over time. She's like, okay, I can go near villages, but maybe going into them is a bad idea.
So you guys were almost like her foster parents, to kind of foster parents, guardian angels, to sort of make sure that she didn't get too close to villages, or that the villagers didn't go try to do something bad when she was
yeah,
close to them.
Definitely. I think guardian angel, I would say foster parent, because we kind of had to let her sit there and watch
right.
and figure out the hunting thing
the,
on her own.
She had to eat by herself, right?
You yeah, but like the definitely the guardian angel is something that I definitely think would be a good way to describe it.
Right.
Every time she got too close to a village, we'd be right there to make sure that she behaved and they behaved.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
And so she was able to then sort of transition into adulthood?
Yeah, she did. And it was, I think, one of the most fulfilling and meaningful moments of my life was just, I guess it wasn't one singular moment, but to know that an animal like survived such hardships throughout its life. And she did. She made it to adulthood. She finally got to that sort of like 18-year-old, 20-year-old, like, okay, I'm cool. I'm going to start hanging out with the boys. Mm-hmm. She met up with some of the male cheetahs in the system that are also collared. So even if we weren't with her every day on the ground, she has a tracking collar. They have a tracking collar. So we started seeing them hanging out, and we knew that she was starting to get sexually mature and actually interacting with the boys. And their initial meetings, it didn't seem like they were actually doing any mating. She may have been kind of figuring out mm-hmm. the whole I'm a girl and you're a boy thing. There's a difference. But yeah, she's now... Goodness, what is she? So she was still a baby in 2018, so 19, 20, 21. She's almost 4 years old, and that's like about the age. Like, they technically sort of reach adulthood around two, mm-hmm. but I think, and they can have their earliest litter of babies when they're around two-ish, but that's unusual. Usually it's closer to 3 to 4.
Okay.
When they kind of figure things out and they figured out how to hunt, and she can. She's absolutely amazing. She kills a lot of what are called duiker. Duiker mm-hmm. are this small antelope. Again, they're like bigger than a corgi, but like smaller than a lab.
Okay.
They're kind of like in between. And that's what her specialty. She's
oh,
she's the duikers, and Oribi is another antelope about that same size. And so she's amazing. And she finally figured it out, you know, and it's like, it's incredibly inspiring to know that she was so resilient and was able to overcome
right.
that hardship. And
so you spent a lot of time in the bush watching her.
Yes.
And was she watching you?
Yes. And that's one of the interesting things. So, you know, she's very wary around, you know, just random people walking out on the plains, you know, random fishermen or whatever.
Right.
But she's become, because we started following her from the time that she was very, very small. Like I said, we've been following her mother before she was born. So 784
right.
has been seeing research vehicles her whole life, literally her whole life.
Right.
So both the Land Rovers that we use and the motorbikes that we also use in Lua. She's very accustomed.
Right. So she sees a person on a motorbike that's different than a person walking around.
Absolutely. On the motorbike, they don't really, I mean, they're not dumb animals. Like, I'm sure they understand that there's sort of something associated with the motorbike, but yeah. they sort of see the motorbike and the person as a whole package.
Okay.
And they've become accustomed to the only people that are using motorbikes out there are department officials and the researchers that work with the department.
Right.
Whereas if they just see some random person walking out, that's a very different thing.
They right. don't that might be a that. Risk.
Yeah. yeah.
And so, when you're out there, then you have to sort of stay on the motorbike.
Yes.
Right. Because you were saying you can't break contact and like start walking around, because then all of a sudden she'll flip out and she'll think Absolutely. That you're a
she'll
regular, regular
yeah.
person.
She'll be very confused. And, you know, animals of all, we always keep, when we are on the motorbikes, we keep a very respectful distance. You know, we don't, you know, usually go any closer than, you know, 50 yards from the animal, close enough to maintain a visual and see what's going on, but not so close. That we would disturb them or alter their behavior or, you know, make them feel uncomfortable. But again, she's used to seeing bikes literally her whole life.
Right.
And, but yeah, we don't break profile ever, but she's grown up very used to us. And, I have a funny story that.
Right. So you're out there a long time.
Yes.
And it's just you and a motorbike.
Yes.
And a cat.
And a cat.
Cheetah.
It was my, 30th birthday. And I went out to check on 74 because she's my, like I said, she's my special girl. She's my favorite animal. No better way to spend your special 30th birthday than to see your favorite animal. And not just she's my favorite animal. She's my favorite individual.
Right.
And I went out to check on her. And she was difficult to find that morning. Liwa is mostly open plains, but there are a couple of areas with some thick woodland. And I was really struggling to find her. I couldn't find her. I could hear her signal from the collar. It sends out a beep so you can track them. And I could hear her, and she was moving, but I couldn't find her. And I did breakfast that morning, but I'm like, I can't stop. I got to find her, because if I stop to, you know, go to the toilet or drink my water, I'm going to lose her signal.
Oh, right. Cause you have her. So you have her VHF pinger.
Yeah.
And so you know that you're somewhat close, but if you lose that, then she could go anywhere and you would totally lose her.
Exactly.
So you had to, once you're kind of hot on the trail, you got to stay on the trail.
Right. And the other problem is that the way that these collars are built, you know, just like anything, your cell phone, like, you know, it has a battery, right? And there's a limited battery life on it. And so the way we've programmed the collars is that this VHF signal that we can listen to with like an antenna, it's only on during certain times of day.
Okay. So you were running against the clock.
I was running against the clock because I had like 20 minutes left to find her before her signal was off for the day. But I really needed to check her to make sure she didn't have any snares and that she wasn't going to move into like a village or anything. And so I'm going, and I finally find her. And I get there, and she's relaxed. Thankfully, she'd kind of like laid down on the edge of this woodland, and it was unfortunately and uncomfortably quite close to people. And so I wasn't comfortable leaving her.
Yeah.
And her VHF signal was off, so I couldn't like leave her, lest I lose her signal and she's gonna like walk right into this village. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay. And I'd kind of parked, you know, about 50 yards away. Right up against a tree so that I kind of had like a little thing up to rest my back.
But you can't even get up and walk away because you need to stay with your vehicle or she'll freak out because there's a person that's not on a
Exactly. But I don't want to go too far away because her signal's off and she's like right next to this village. And unfortunately, whatever I had for breakfast that morning was not sitting well in my stomach.
Uh-oh.
And so I am feeling this rumbling in my tummy, and I'm like, I am gonna poop my pants.
Oh no.
I need to go to the toilet, like, now. And thankfully, like, Lou is this big sandy area. Like, it's a big floodplain. It's all beautiful white sand. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh my God. Like, and I get to the point, I don't know, this is, everyone's had a point where they like really have to go to the bathroom, and you realize it's like,
it's going to happen now.
It's going to happen now. Like, my stomach is extremely upset. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm 50 yards from this cheetah. And I'm on the edge of this woodland. I can't go anywhere. Like, this is happening now. Like, and I'm just like, so I kind of like like the bike is there and there's a tree right next to me. Like, okay, I can like slide off of the bike and, you know, do this right here. So I'm like with my, like the back of my foot with my heel, I'm kind of like digging a hole into the sand and I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, I'm not like in the village, but I'm reasonably close. Right. Yeah. So I should like look around. Okay. I don't see anybody. And she's calm, cool as a cucumber. Again, she's been seeing bikes her whole life. Right. She couldn't care less about me. She's kind of like half dozing the way that cats do where their eyelids are down. I was like, okay, now's my moment. So I like get off of the bike and I squat down. I can just see like my eyes over the edge of the bike to keep an eye on her to make sure, okay, I'm not disturbing her. Yeah. So I could just see her, like my eyes over the bike, keeping an eye on her. And she can't see me at all because I've gone on the side of the bike and there's a tree. But all of a sudden I like slide my pants. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go. And all of a sudden she just sits up with ears erect, the way, you know, just like on alert. And I was like, and I know it's like, she's not looking at me. She's looking behind me.
Right past you.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh God, no. Oh God, no. And sure enough, I just like casually look over my shoulder and here are these two fishermen.
Oh no.
Standing like maybe 30 yards away from me with like spears in hand for their fishing. God. And absolutely, they're like, oh my God, here's this random white girl with her pants down next to a motorbike. And a cheetah, like 50 yards away. This must have been the most bizarre thing they have ever seen in their life. And I'm like, and it was amazing how, like, no matter how bad I had to go to the toilet in the moment, it was like the pure adrenaline shock that I got shut down.
Shut down the whole system.
Anything.
Well, that's good, actually. That just saved you a little bit.
And so I was just like, okay. And so then I'm all like pretending to like casually be like, put the pants back up.
Like,
and
they didn't notice.
Yeah, I'm like reaching down, pretending to like look for some leaves on the ground, like I dropped my pencil or something. Oh, and I just like casually put my leg back over the bike. And I just kind of, and they're just standing there completely statue still, just staring at me. Like as
no
said,
expression.
Like, yeah, like just like as if they didn't see, but like I pretended and they pretended that nothing happened. And I was like, okay, and I just kind of like waved at them. And they looked at me, and they looked at the cheetah, and they just kind of like shook their head and just kept walking. And they're like, all right, well, that was weird. Right. And the second they walked off, she immediately flumped back. Total relaxation.
Total relaxing.
And within a minute, eyes were closed again. And I laughed so hard. I was like, that was the best birthday present that anybody could have given me, was my girl 784 preventing me from pooping in front of two fishermen.
Not what you would have wished for when you woke up on your birthday, but
not at all, but it was extremely appreciated.
That's amazing.
Best gift I got.
Yeah. Wow, you and that cat have a special bond.
Seriously. It's like she looks out for me in ways that
Well, you look out for her and she looks out for you.
Exactly. If that's beautiful. There you go.
So what's she doing now? When's the last time that you've heard from her, from her signal or seen her?
So very exciting. Apparently she did finally figure out what that whole I'm a girl and you're a boy thing is all about, because she's denning.
Okay.
She's about to have her first litter of babies herself. And so we're so excited. And it's just such a story of, I don't know, inspiration and hope, because she's this, like the title says, she's the orphan that overcame insurmountable odds, like losing her mother at such a young age to poachers. And now she herself managed to beat the odds and she's now having little cubs of her own. And I can't wait till they're big enough that I can see them when they were once her size.
Well, that's great. And it's so important when you have the cheetah population sort of globally that's declining. Like every cheetah matters, right?
Absolutely. Seriously. Every cheetah matters. They're critically endangered in Zambia. There's only a couple hundred at most, probably less than 200. And so her life matters. And those little ones she's got in the, in the tall grass.
However many she's got.
Yeah. I'm hoping 5 or 6.
Oh my God.
That's my goal.
We can hope so. Well, cool. Well, I hope she's successful and I hope you have a good chance to go check out and see her offspring and then the next generation of Zambia's carnivores.
Absolutely. Let's all keep our fingers crossed for 784's little ones.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing your amazing story, the good and the bad and the ugly. It was awesome to talk to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Roland. It was great to have you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Wild Animals Podcast. If you like this, be sure to check out the Wild Animals YouTube channel, where we tell visual stories about wild animals using camera trap footage. Special thanks for production help in this podcast from Edmund Crawford, and for support from the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences and North Carolina State University.